And I'm not sure whether you are aware or not, but we are in the 16 days of activism. There was a women's march on the weekend, a withdrawal of labor. Now we are in the 16 days of activism up until the 10th of December, I believe, Human Rights Day. So to chat about GBV, on the line is Michael Massina, GBV activist and victim support lead at Women for Change. Michael, thank you for chatting to me on High FM this afternoon.
Afternoon. Thank you so much for having me.
Michael, so South Africa has declared GBV a national crisis. What, in your opinion, does this declaration actually mean in practice for survivors and for activists?
Yes, no, absolutely. I think it is one certainly a step in the right direction. It's something that we have been calling for and trying to put to the forefront for quite a long time now, a couple of years. Our organization as Women for Change have led the fought and fighting to have the government just listen and to our cries and to ultimately declare gender-based violence state of disaster. But you know, we did get the categorization rather, or classification, if I can put it like that. So that in its sense means, although there will be no change to the laws and the legislation that are currently existing in our country, but we can expect it added or additional contingencies to be added to those laws in order to possibly have finally meaningful impact and meaningful change, particularly in the lives of those affected by gender-based violence and femicide and all the survivors in the country.
Michael, as we head into the 16 days of activism, why is this year's campaign especially significant?
This year's campaign is very much significant for us as an organization because it's a continuation. It's a continuation of the work that we've started, and you know, the campaign that I think everyone saw had such meaningful traction and impact in our country. So for our organization, which I'll speak on behalf, it is certainly a continuation of the work that we've already started. We've laid the foundation, and right now we are all about trying to make the individuals that basically made the promises to basically fulfill them and to ensure that they can actually implement all of the frameworks that are in place, starting with the National Strategic Plan that was already in place, as well as now the declaration or the classification. So we're trying to make sure that we continue the work that we've already put in terms of getting accountability as well as reporting, as well as also added resources and funding that will, at the end of the day, make sure that we have enough support resources for all survivors in terms of safe houses and GBV shelters that can they can crisis, as well as added to Duzela care centers if it means additional court supports. That is something that will also, more than anything, we are trying to bring forth and push for no bail time for any perpetrators of gender-based violence.
Michael, there's a lot to do, clearly. I'm just wondering to what extent you and your organization is being heard. Do you think that the government and law enforcement are responding with the urgency that this crisis demands, or, in your opinion, are communities still being left to kind of fend for themselves?
I think the government has finally acknowledged us in our cries. That is one thing that is for certain that I can say. It did take a long time for them to finally do so, but it doesn't matter us as an organization, because it's fundamental to us making sure that we help and touch and change so many lives as possible. So the fact that it took them so long is, you know, is not the biggest thing for us right now. What is most predominant is the fact that they finally acknowledge that. But more than anything, I do believe that they are seeing the urgency in it as of this state. Is obviously their actions and their follow-up when it comes to the rollout of this categorization or the declaration.
Michael, it's really interesting because in preparation for this discussion with you this afternoon, I did a bit of research. I've got a, I don't know what you want to call it, guidance, advice, perhaps from the South African government, and they do appear to be taking it seriously. There is a whole full page of them addressing communities, saying, don't hide this anymore, report it. I mean, they clearly are making the right noises. How that translates or not is another issue, but at least the sounds are the right sounds.
Yeah, I mean, we've had the lip service for quite a long time now. That's
Okay.
not something we're
Yeah.
unfamiliar with. And that's,
Okay.
we've always seen that South Africa has some of the best laws in the world. The problem has always been the implementation of those laws and the people that they have in place to make sure that they
Interesting.
implement them. So
Yeah,
that's
yeah, yeah.
the full page you are mentioning. I can understand that. We've seen a lot of, people from government and our leaders also endorsing our shutdown. They did not even, try to stand in our way. But they too, by lip service once again, acknowledge the importance and the urgency of it. But like I mentioned before, what we are calling for now is no more empty promises, and no more just legislation that is beautiful on paper. But we actually want to see that reflect in the daily realities of South African women, children, but as members of the LGBTQ plus community.
Michael, it's kind of a perverse question to even ask, but I'm just wondering if you're seeing any particular trends in GBV cases. For example, are they becoming more violent or more public or more hidden?
The numbers themselves keep rising. That's one thing that is more significant. So hence why we are saying we need more resources on the ground and we need to start implementing radical and urgent change, because the numbers keep rising. The stories, like you mentioned, also become more gruesome. Nothing has changed in the number of years that I've been working in the field, multiple organizations. I have not seen a significant change, hence why the shutdown was so important for us and why we would not back down and why we will continue even post-shutdown to fight for what is right for the survivors.
Michael, I want to circle back to that incident. I happened to be in Cape Town. I saw a significant march happen in front of where I am on the weekend. Did this gain traction throughout the country? Was it well supported, the
Oh, it was
march?
beyond support. I think it was well beyond our wildest imagination. I think when we launched the shutdown at the beginning of November, we did not even anticipate the amount of support that we received from communities in South Africa. We saw them galvanized on the 21st, coming together, women taking the stand, and those that couldn't join us in all of the key locations across the country, they still participated in their respective offices, their workplaces, or wherever they were in the country. We received so much support, so many messages of love on our social media and our emails and support structures. But more than anything, we saw a lot of women stand in solidarity and resistance about and towards the crisis that we've been dealing with for quite a while now in South Africa. So we would
So let's.
definitely move. And one thing that is for certain is that now when we fight, we are no longer fighting individually as an organization, but we have all these women behind us rallying and supporting us.
The word that's missing out of everything you've just said is men, and I'm wondering what role men should play in shifting culture and assisting to end GBV.
Absolutely. I speak knowing very well that that we have had some black backlash when it comes to the campaign itself, calling on particularly women and the queer community. But one thing that we emphasize is that in the campaign specifically focuses on women and girls and the queer community, because they are the most affected, statistically speaking, and from our work on the ground when it comes to and one thing we also emphasize, we do not discriminate. So men were definitely allowed to partake, and they also showed up on the 21st. I saw a lot of men. I did receive a lot of queries, of course, first asking, are men allowed to partake? And I just always had to clarify, because we do need men as well in the conversation. In as much as the statistics are as they are, it's very important that we as men as well start having those conversations amongst each other, most importantly. When we see it, we stop the bystanderism or, the sense of it's just how we are as men. So the conversation needs to start with us to talk amongst each other. The campaign specifically was women and for the queer community standing in solidarity and saying that enough is enough.
Final question for you this afternoon, Michael. For listeners heading into the 16 days of activism, what's the one call to action that you would want them to carry with them?
the one call to action is to not give up, and to not get into a state of helplessness. And this goes out to us as an organization as well, because it's easy to find yourself, you know, when we've been advocating and calling for something that is clearly crisis, but the people that are actually in power and are able to make a significant or meaningful change seem to be, you know, ignoring us and trying to. So I want everyone to understand that the work has only just begun. And from now towards 16 days of it, even afterwards, the work and still rally behind us and support us as we try to make sure that we hold all the people are able to make the changes with the declaration. And we ask that they also continue to support us as an organization.
Michael Messina, we're going to leave it there this afternoon. Thank you for your input.